2 Samuel chapter 17. This is the account of Ahithophel's advice not being taken and David having to flee from Absalom his son. Well, the day that Absalom entered Jerusalem and the events to do with David's fleeing from him in 2 Samuel 15 up to 17, 18, are really covered in very great detail. The coverage, if you like, of how many verses per hour in those couple of days is very, very high. And you've got to remember that you can read the Bible and there are whole years in people's lives where you don't hear anything about what happened, or there's a couple of verses that may cover a certain incident, but this whole thing about Absalom and David and Absalom's taking of power and the events around this are covered with very great detail. In fact, I would say that this period is covered by the biblical history with more detail than probably many other periods in biblical history in the Old Testament. The tragedy of a generally good man having to suffer for his sins to this extent is underlined to us. And maybe it is for us to think, well, you know, sure he did wrong, but it was a sin of hot blood, and sure he got Uriah murdered to sort of get out of it, and other Israelite soldiers were killed as a result of it. You know, frankly, there's people who've done far worse than that in biblical history, who apparently don't suffer so much. And you think of Moses, that he spoke inadvisedly with his lips, again, the sin of hot blood, sin of a moment, and bang, he can't enter into the land. After all, that he was, you know, he was the meekest man on earth, we're told. A huge accolade from God. Think of Uzzah putting out his hand to stop the ark from falling off the wagon. Bang, he's killed. Ananias and Sapphira, they sold what they had, gave the majority of it, I guess, to the poor, but because they lied, trying to make out their generosity was bigger than it actually was, and I suppose the lie was not about a huge amount of money to keep the whole thing credible, well, bang, they die. The old prophet who bravely goes and criticizes the altar at Bethel, and God says, don't turn back by the way you came, don't eat or drink anything. Well, another prophet says, oh, come back to my place, I've had a word from the Lord that you're to come and eat with me. And he goes, and he's killed by a lion, clearly judged by God for that. Why is it that God, in these instances, behaves in apparently a very hard way? Well, I think it's to remind us that the wages of sin is death. Adam and Eve, in between the commas, only ate the fruit, and bang, all this happened. Yeah, the wages of sin is death. One sin, death. God rarely, it seems, operates that. He shows huge grace, massive patience to people to try to bring them back to him. You think of the sins of people like Manasseh and that. You know, he puts up with it. He works with them right to the end. But the fact that he is so gracious, we need to still be reminded now and again, and we are in the cases I've just mentioned, that God does in fact deal or can deal with sin just very hardly, as we would think. Because sin is sin. And you always got to remember that. It's that which will keep you humble. Well, in this period that we're reading of here, David writes quite a lot of the Psalms. I think it's Psalm 3, when he talks about how many are the people who are increased against me, talking of how the people increased with Absalom, how they've risen up against me, just as we read here that Ahithophel says to Absalom, I will arise, I will rise up and pursue after David. And yet David's response in those Psalms he writes is to say, oh God, judge them, look after me, judge them, bring them down, kill them. And God does, and Absalom eventually gets killed. And then, oh, David's like, Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, Absalom, would God I had died for you. Simple lesson, be careful what you pray for and what you really desire, because you're probably going to get it in essence. And it may not be what you actually want. And I think with David losing Absalom, that is an example. So this Ahithophel gives his advice. He was David's own familiar friend in whom he trusted. He was also Bathsheba's grandfather, so you can understand why he got off with David. The advice he gives to Absalom is very good. He says, look, we need to deal with this immediately. We don't want a civil war. Verse 2, I'll come upon him while he's exhausted and he's beat up and weary. And David, it seems, was sick at the time while he lay, we're told, at Mahanaim. The people with him will flee and I'll just kill the king. So we won't have a civil war, we'll just sort it out. Now, his advice was best, but Hushai, who's of course David's secret supporter, and a reminder to us that you can work for the Lord and be on his side, even in high places, even if you're high up in the corporate world, you can still be like Hushai and secretly be on the Lord's side and further his cause. Hushai said, well, you know your father and his men, they're great warriors and they're bitter in their minds, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. He's probably hidden in some cave. Well, of course, everyone knew the stories of David hiding in the cave against Saul, etc. He's going to fight back and he's going to kill a few people and everyone's going to get scared. No, you go to battle in your own person, Absalom. Now, Absalom was not particularly a military man, but the idea of being the figurehead of an inevitable victory that he was going to win just by sheer force of numbers, that obviously appealed to him. Well, Absalom, because he was proud, accepted the counsel of Hushai and said to Ahithophel, I'm not going to do what you say. And Ahithophel was also proud that he goes and kills himself. And yeah, the whole point of all of this is pride, 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 pride. That's the point all the way through this. Now, David had prayed in 2 Samuel 15 when he knows Ahithophel has turned against him. He says, turn his wisdom to foolishness. And, well, that's what happened here. His wisdom was overridden. So God ordained all this. It says here in verse 14 of chapter 17, Yahweh had ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, to the intent Yahweh might bring evil on Absalom. So David prayed for this, and it happened. And the way God pulls the strings is amazing. Well, back to David in verse 29, there he is on the run, absolutely everything against him. And yet Barzillai here comes out with honey, butter, sheep and cheese for David and the men that were with him, because they were hungry, weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So he prepared a table for David, and this is, I think, what David reflects on in Psalm 23, verse 5, I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. This is when he's going down towards the Jordan Valley at this time. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. So with Absalom's guys pretty well on his case, he suddenly is given this table, prepared with, flowing with everything that you could dream of. And God does that to us too, sometimes in your very darkest moments. An amazing touch of grace comes into your life. You can be crying your eyes out, sitting at a table and a blackbird or something just comes and drops something. Or an animal comes up to you and looks at you with great pity in their eyes. Well, this table prepared as the great comfort, you could say, looks forward really to the breaking of bread. And when he says in Psalm 23, you prepare a table before me, this is the very phrase used in Exodus 40 about the preparation of the table of showbread. It's as if there he is, unable to go to the temple, well, the sanctuary, let's say. He's been driven out of Zion, and in his Psalms he often regrets that he can't go and do sacrifice because he's on the run from Absalom like he was from Saul. And yet, out there, in the middle of nowhere, suddenly he finds a table prepared. He finds, as it were, the table of showbread, as if he is right there in the holy place. And I think this shows spirituality rather than religion. You may be driven out for whatever reason or unable to attend or to be present at the sanctuary, as it were, church life, breaking of bread and so forth. That is not to say that you are outside of God's presence. The table of showbread, the table of the presence, was suddenly given to him, quite by surprise, in the middle of nowhere, in the desert, in the wilderness. While he was, as we read in verse 29, hungry, weary, and thirsty in the wilderness, suddenly, middle of the wilderness, there's this amazing table prepared. It's rather like he says in the Psalms that he dwells beneath the cherubim, as if he wasn't just in the holy place, but in the most holy, where the high priest could only go once a year to put the blood of atonement on the mercy seat, on the lid of the Ark of the Covenant, with the cherubim wings above it. And David says, I dwell, I live there, actually, beneath the cover of your wings. And so don't think that if for whatever reason you are somehow out of it, could be a whole load of reasons, could be geographical isolation, it could be health issues that stop you, it could be that you fall out with the people in the church and you don't go there anymore of your choice, or it could be that they chuck you out for some strange reason. These things all happen. So it is. And those things happen, as they happened to David, that you might actually find the true table of showbread, the true presence of God, which is not, I don't believe, in religious structure, but in personal relationship.